I'm Matthew Petty, and this is Intersection. Lawmakers in Tallahassee and Washington are back to work after their holiday break, and they've lots to tackle in 2014. Immigration reform, unemployment benefits, and the debt ceiling are all on the agenda in the upcoming session. I'll speak with 90.7's political commentators Dick Batchelor and Lou Fry about the state and national impact of these issues, as well as local politics here in Central Florida. The political outlook of 2014, that's ahead on Intersection. I'm joined by 90.7's political commentators Lou Fry and Dick Batchelor. Lou Fry, a former Republican congressman. He's the founder of the Lou Fry Institute for Politics and Government at the University of Central Florida. Welcome to the program, Lou.
And I had nothing to do with the football team, unfortunately. What a knockout they were.
And Dick Batchelor, a former Democratic State House representative. He's also the founder and president of the Dick Batchelor Management Group. Welcome back to the program, Dick.
Thank you. And as alumnus, I'm very proud of the Knights.
Yes, indeed. At the end of 2013, 1.3 million Americans, including 73,000 Floridians, lost unemployment benefits when Congress did not reauthorize the federal program that authorized those benefits. The Senate began moving legislation forward to extend the benefits, albeit temporarily, last week. First of all, Lou Fry, do you see the Senate reaching out over party lines to extend these benefits?
Yeah. I think that's one of those issues that you can figure out how you can help somewhat, you know, and we've seen in the past in the welfare issue where when you stop paying for babies, people stopped having babies. Mm-hmm. So you have to look at the legislation and what it does and who it helps and the long-term look at it. And I would suspect some sort of a compromise would come out of it.
Mm-hmm. Dick Batchelor, what are your thoughts on this?
Well, first of all, I hope they do it. And secondly, I think, you know, the bone of contention really is I think there's consensus on both sides to do it, but the Republicans want it paid for rather than just building in the existing budget. So that's the bone of contention, and whether or not they can reach some kind of agreement to fund it out of other resources or not. But I think in the end they'll do it, because I think this is one of those issues, while it only affects, quote, 1.3 million people, just the way it's perceived as trying to help somebody who's unemployed, and these are people who've been unemployed, you know, for up to 27 weeks.
Mm-hmm. How long do you think it'll take to forge that compromise?
I think it'll be soon. I think they need to do this soon and move along. I keep in mind that those people, you know, have been unemployed 27 weeks. It's not as if they've been sitting around doing nothing. The requirement in the federal law now is you have to be actively looking for a job and prove that you are.
Mm-hmm. What about the measure being taken up by the House? Lou Fry, House Speaker John Boehner is calling for job creation initiatives and funding for the extension before he'll take it up. Do you think this is likely?
I think it's going to be a much more difficult process in the House, and I'm not so sure where they're going to come down yet. I don't think they know where they're going to come down yet. One of the things that hopefully is going to come out of the debt ceiling issue and those things as they face them is they're going to have to prioritize. I mean, we're probably going to be talking about a whole bunch of things today that aren't going to ever become law but will be talked about, like, mm-hmm. you know, okay, what are we going to do about immigration and where is that going to go and how much of our political capital are we going to spend mm-hmm. on that? Or are we just going to say, hey, that's just a Florida issue or a California issue and we're not going to waste any time on it because you got the two branches, the House and the Senate, go still not anywhere near agreement on that. And where's Rubio?
Mm-hmm. But, and I think what you'll see, too, and you can tie these issues together, I think it appears that Speaker Boehner, when he pushed back against the Tea Party and moved ahead last time, he's basically found some footing with his Republican caucus. And I think what he will do is try to resolve this issue with or without additional funding. But then I think he'll move on to immigration, because now he's talking about doing piecemeal immigration, something that Lou had suggested that might happen a year ago. So it looks like the Republican Party and the Republican leadership is reading the tea leaves and the polls and saying on this work issues, minimum wage, those kind of issues, we need to be perceived more as for the working person and on immigration. We've got to move on immigration, even if we don't come out with an omnibus bill, but something that's piecemeal.
Mm-hmm. Well, Lou Fry, you brought up Marco Rubio. Where's he? I mean, he's called for reform measures for poverty and saying they should be passed on to the states as opposed to the federal government. What are your thoughts on that?
Well, that's not a new idea.
Exactly.
You always get somebody else to pay for your deal. It's pretty good. I think Marco has decided that that issue isn't one that he really wants to ride for a long time. And he jumped off it pretty quickly into the healthcare areas and that. And I think he's probably right that you know, he's looking down the line at 2016. And so when you're doing that instead of running for office like all the members of the House are doing, you got a lot more pressure on you as a House member than you do as a Senate member, because people won't remember your name. I mean, more or less how you voted.
Mm-hmm. And Rubio gave a speech too on the 50th anniversary of the War on Poverty launched by LBJ, again, 50 years ago, and taking a position that really doesn't work. We have to do other things, but there's no fill in the blanks. What other things are you talking about? And it's hard to set aside issues like, one, you know, extending the unemployment benefits to those who have been employed for 27 weeks and actively looking. Number two, do you support the president and his minimum wage going from $7 and what, a quarter, I think it is, or $7.50 to $10.10 an hour? How do you push back? Again, where philosophically, where do you come down? It's one thing to give a speech to say the war on poverty has not been successful. We need to do more. But what is the more? Fill in the blanks. And that's where I think you have both sides all having a difficult time filling in the blanks. What is it we can do substantively?
You know, then you said something, Dick, too. I really hadn't focused that much on it. Boehnert really is one of the few people who came out of this in better shape than he went into it.
I agree.
Which, you know, he looked like he's dead and out and everything, but he's resourceful. He's bounced back. And I think if there's a legitimate deal to make, he'll work on it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, who would have thought it last year people were, as you say, writing his death warrant?
Oh, yeah. He was done.
Well, if I could just take a little detour. I mean, you mentioned Lou Fry, somebody with his eye on 2016, and Marco Rubio just detouring or taking a bit of a roadblock, if you will. What do you make of the issue over this bridge blockade and Chris Christie? What's that done for him?
I was thinking about this yesterday, because this is not the first time this kind of thing happens. Muskie, Senator Maine, really good guy. They wrote an article about his wife and his family, and he got up there and he got so emotional he cried in the primary and lost. They threw him out. And then there was Ted Kennedy, who decided to run for president, and he went in one of the Today Show or something like that, and they asked him, why do you want to be president? And it was really like, duh.
Didn't know.
And there went that campaign. I was involved in one with a guy named Giuliani. Really a very bright, decent guy. He kept hoarding his money in Florida. He heard, you know, that you had to win Florida. Well, three-day campaign, shortest campaign I've ever been involved in my life. The only reason I mention it is that they're all different. And if you're in politics or real estate, it's location, location, location. But if you're in politics, it's timing, timing, timing. Mm-hmm. This thing happened 2 months before to be a problem. Right now, it's not much of a problem for him unless something really pops out, and unless he does something incredibly dumb again.
Yeah. Dick Batchel, what do you think? Is this going to come back and haunt him?
What is it now? Bridgegate, and it's Bridge Over Troubled Waters, and it's Bridge Godsey. It's really, I don't know where it's developing. The fact is, though, it will continue to be investigated, which could be bad news. I think Governor Christie handled the press conference quite well. I think he spent too much time talking about how he was offended and how he was betrayed and not the public and taxpayers. But I think he did a good job. Mm-hmm. I think what people are beginning to unravel now is, what is his personality? Does he have the temperament to be president? I mean, he called a former Navy SEAL an idiot because he questioned his education policies. He's called reporters idiots, and that might settle well with some people. I don't know. Now the good news is, he's now becoming the head of the National Republican Governors Association. He's got to raise money. He's already scheduled 3 fundraisers in Florida for Governor Scott. So he's gotten a lot of play. But the bad news is, once the media gets intently interested in you, they can drill down and drill down and drill down. So he doesn't have much latitude for any other mistakes.
Yeah, if he makes another mistake and looks dumb in that, this will all come up. Right now it's background noise, and hopefully he's smart enough. Listen, you want your president to be smart enough to know what he's doing and who he's working with and what the problems are. And you certainly don't want your aides running around doing everything. You want some chain on them.
And
we see what happened with Watergate. There's another one if you want to look at. But that was a total different thing. That knocked 72 Republicans out of the House and Nixon back to California.
Well, if we could move back to Congress, you know, last year's session of Congress resulted in a 16-day government shutdown, and some have called that session the least productive session in congressional history. Do you expect that lawmakers will learn from that shutdown and work together better in this upcoming term? Dick Batchelor?
Yes. And I'm sure Lou's going to say yes. If you don't, you know, there's an old saying, it's not very productive to take yourself hostage,
yeah.
Politically hostage, and
or
it's not.
Or a circular firing squad.
And that's what they did. I think they've learned from that. In fact, every Republican I hear, no matter what issue, they always, and I'm sure there are these speaking notes that come out from the Republican National Committee, they always say, but we do not want to shut the exact government down. I don't care where they disagree with the president. We do not want to shut the government down. So it's kind of their mantra right now.
Yeah, and they were in much worse shape for earlier in this campaign, if you will,
yes,
campaign
they were.
Year. They got bailed out a little bit, and Obama's keeping some of this stuff alive. So when you're looking at the race, it's a lot more equal in terms of who we don't like, you know, in the Congress. And I think that that probably will mean that the Democrats maybe pick up a few seats. I wouldn't be shocked if three seats went Republican way or three or four Democrat way, Dick, and in the House, and that doesn't change. And when you look at the Senate, it's probably reasonable to think that there'll be a three-vote margin for the Democrats in there, but nobody has 60.
Mm-hmm.
And that makes it a lot. That's the magic number still, despite what they're messing around with in the Senate. That's basically the key.
All that
number.
Minor nuclear option thing, just a minor detail, just a rule.
Yeah.
Well, the true test will be when the debt ceiling comes up in February or March. Lou Fry, do you think we'll see the same stalling in Congress like we did in October?
I think it will be a lot less static in it. You're looking at that date and you're looking at the election. All of a sudden, you're just months away from it. I hope the Republicans have learned a lesson about how to handle that issue. And I don't think the Democrats want to be fussing with that issue. They aren't going to get a free ride this time. Like they did before, they if they keep their mouth shut. Sometimes in politics, it's best you keep your mouth shut and let your opponent do some things that aren't the smartest. So,
What is that old saying? It's better to remain silent and be thought a fool than open your mouth and remove all doubt. So I don't know, but I think on these issues again, at least you had Congressman Ryan and Senator Murray with a joint committee coming up with some kind of compromise. You could argue whether or not the compromise was significant enough or not, but at least they were talking. I'm hoping that platform, that paradigm is set up now for them to go back and figure out something so they don't have a government shutdown and the debt ceiling issue is relieved of that.
And we have some issues that they can run with, hopefully. Not major earth-shaking issues, but issues where something good has happened for the country and it's moved down the path and nobody has killed it just because of the politics of it. That's, if you can get that, then you're going to do all right.
Well, Lou Fry, you just came back from a trip from Washington. Do you get the sense that there's an air of compromise up in the Capitol?
Yeah, it was interesting. I was with some friends of mine who had been in the leadership of both Democrat and Republican Party and that, and every once in a while they have dinner, just talk about stuff. And we talked. We know people, know wives. I mean, it's really a different thing. But most everybody that came back was a little bit up. They thought, gee, you know, that it did work. It did look like they were doing something, and they were willing to do it. And the elections are getting close, and, you know, this used to be a fun thing to do. And there's hope that it will get back to be a decent, fun thing to do.
Mm-hmm. The issue of immigration, of course, we touched on it just before. I want to come back to it, though. I mean, do you think this will come up in the form of either a piecemeal approach or a comprehensive immigration bill? Dick Batchelor, what are your thoughts?
Well, you know, the Senate, of course, has an omnibus bill, and, of course, Senator Rubio was one of the four senators who worked on that. But the House, Speaker Boehner has made it clear that he would do immigration, but he wants to do it piecemeal. And path to citizenship is really the bone of contention. I mean, do you grant a path to citizenship, as does the legislation in the Senate, which Rubio had to back off of, or do you basically tell people, here's how you can qualify, you know, register, pay back taxes, get in the back of the line, and that kind of thing? But I still think the good news is they're willing to talk about it. And while they might, I suggest that if they get piecemeal legislation, I would hope the Senate wouldn't block piecemeal, but go ahead and take by the hand rather than an omnibus bill. But I'm fearful that
do
the
something about the borders, Dick, and right, this is the first step that people could agree on.
I don't know how much more money we need to spend on the borders, but there's a lot being spent now. But they could still have logged said. One more factor is, I think Lou will agree to this, the closer you get to election time, the less likely you find to find compromise. Because if the Democrats can think they can take immigration and run against the Republicans on that, they will, and they will not compromise on a piecemeal House version.
But that's not necessarily news.
The closer we get, like Alice said in Wonderland, the curiouser we get. Yeah, so
that's for sure.
Lou Fry, what do you think about this as it ties into President Obama's legacy? Obviously, that was a big deal for him going into his first term. Some folks who were hoping that he would get it done in the first term were unhappy that he wasn't able to make any progress there. Do you see this kind of becoming a thorn in the side?
I think, in all fairness, Obama's had a tough presidency and it's tough to be involved in. Right now, I don't think his legacy is where he wants it to be. I think Jimmy Carter is in his eyesight maybe for the next step. But I think that he is very aware of it, and I think that's probably a good thing for the country, that he does care enough about where it's going and where we're going. And, I've said from the very start, he has got a wonderful policy. It's never retreat, attack in a different direction. And he's used that in all the way through. If something happens wrong, he says, well, yeah, that's wrong, but look at this. And he roars on to some other thing or has a press conference and next thing you know, he's talking about this event at a fundraiser. Mm-hmm. So he's a good campaigner.
Mm-hmm. You're listening to Intersection on 90.7 News. I'm Matthew Petty. We're talking to political commentators Dick Batchelor and Lou Fry, taking a look at the year ahead in politics. You can join the conversation online on Facebook and Twitter. You can also send us an email, intersection@wmfe.org. Well, if we drill down now to state politics, Florida legislators will be looking at a few options to expand gambling laws in the state, including the possibility of a constitutional amendment to the fall ballot. Lou Fry, if the legislature doesn't decide anything this session, is there the possibility the issue could come to a vote in November, and will the legislature be able to come to a decision this session?
Well, if they do, it'll be sort of unique. This, when I was running for governor, this was one of the issues that came up, the gambling issue, and I felt from the very start that we're not a gambling state, that we're a family state, and those values ought to be pushed in the legislation, that there's nothing wrong in sense with gambling, but I just didn't like where it was going and where it was going down the line. And I wake up 20 years later, and, it's same thing, talking about the same issues, and maybe even some of the same people for all.
Right, all there are some of the same
We know. So I think it's a legitimate issue. The people are, it's in front of people. I don't think it's going to pass. But each year they get closer.
Mm-hmm. Dick Batchelor, are we still a non-gambling state, or is Florida more?
I think we are now. I'll disclose I've always supported no casinos. I've been opposed to casinos from the time I was in the legislature and continue to be, number one. Keep in mind, though, you already have gambling.
Yeah.
The Seminole tribe has full gambling rights because it's on Indian lands. It's amazing how many people will try to declare themselves a tribe just so they can gamble. Keep in mind, too, there was a constitutional amendment which allowed the referendum in Broward County and Dade County for limited gambling. But I think what's happening, I think the legislature has spent a great deal of time on it the last session. And it appears, if you listen to the leadership in the House and Senate, they tend to be leaning towards, kick it down to the voters and put it on the ballot and let the voters decide, because I think it's that controversial. Mm-hmm. And I think that if I had to bet today, I think they'll move towards, keep in mind, the legislature could buy 3/5 vote of both houses, put a proposed constitution on the ballot for November.
Well, if we move to another hopeful ballot initiative, medical marijuana, and of course we've spoken about this in the past, United for Care is heading it, largely backed financially by attorney John Morgan. Dick Batchelor, it seems like they'll have enough signatures to put that petition on the ballot. Do you think it will be something that passes in the fall, though?
I think it gets on the ballot to pass. If you look at the polls, Democrats and Republicans, for medical marijuana usage, not legalization of marijuana, and I want to draw that distinction. Secondly, what's fascinating to me, a very conservative Representative Gates in the House, who happens to be the son of the Senate President Gates, he came out recently and said that he wanted to work on legislation for a very prescriptive, and in pun intended, a very prescriptive use of medical marijuana. You have two extracts on marijuana. You've got THC, which is the element that gets you high. Then you have what they call CBD. And CBD is the element in marijuana that's proven that it helps children with seizures and things like that. So it's very interesting to me, and you know, one of the other members of the committee is a Baptist minister, probably one of the most conservative members of the legislature, says it makes sense to me, again, if you can focus on medical marijuana. I think politically, as a last note, the House might be or the Senate might be moving towards finding legislation that's more prescriptive, narrowly drawn, and try to preempt the constitutional amendment. Mm-hmm.
If we could look at now Florida's 13th Congressional District, a special election there to fill the seat of late Bill Young, and this election said to be a barometer of the political climate heading into the midterm elections. Former Florida CFO and gubernatorial candidate Alex Sink is running alone in the Democratic primary. She looks to be the front runner in the special election in March. Lou, what do you think Alex Sink's chances are in that district?
I think it's a split district. It's Bill Young was the only Republican who probably could have kept that district right. For all that period of time. He did a wonderful job, was a great congressperson. I had the privilege of recommending him for the Appropriations Committee the House, and he stayed on that committee since 1970.
Wow.
And longest serving, and also, by the way, one of the most powerful every year, no matter who was running the Congress, the House. Bill Young was right in there in the leadership of it. So you got to back him out now and look at who's doing it and who's on the other side. My guess is both parties are going to make this a fight. Democrats don't want to Republicans don't want to let it go, and the Democrats think this is one that they can take. And I think they're right. Who's going to put all the money? That's what we'll have to watch.
Mm-hmm. Just talking about long-standing and long-running politicians – there are a bunch of local elections coming up, for example, March 11th. Apopka, the longtime mayor, John Land, is seeking a 20th term, and he's in his 90s. What do you take from these local elections?
I think they're important to the people who reside in Apopka, but overall not that important because it's a smaller city, and that doesn't reflect on Apopka. But the problem is when you've got somebody to hit his advantage like John Land, who's been there forever, and people like him, they keep reelecting him, and even though he's over 90 now and wants to go in again, I think he has an opponent, but I just think...
More power to him.
We have a tax collector here who is in his 90s, and a friend of mine says, I'm going to run against tax collector. Okay, but he's been in there way too long. He's been in there 60 years. Mm-hmm. And I said, you're going to lose. And he said, why? I said, no one cares. You know, who cares who your tax collector is? I mean, I'm going to write a check every year for my taxes. Or I've been writing, or okay, what if I automatically do it this year? But, you know, some of those issues are like constitutional offices. People really don't care. Who's the clerk of the court? What's the clerk of the court going to do for you, the property appraiser, tax collector?
One of the things, too, with the statewide, with the issue and all the little cities and counties we have, they've had a real problem of keeping the political presence that they do want, and they're working very hard on. They're trying to get an issue now. That all the cities and counties will agree on in terms, say, of education, mm-hmm. and they'll all back that. And so, if they do that, they can have a lot more political clout than they have shown up to date. And mm-hmm. I think they're trying.
I'm not miniaturizing at all the role of the, yeah. of the mayor of any small city. They got responsibilities; they're local and they respond to people. I'm just saying, in the gist of things, though, they're not partisan, and so that takes away some of the competitiveness of those races.
Mm-hmm. Republican State Representative Steve Precourt stepping down to take on the job of director of the Orlando-Orange County Expressway Authority, the agency responsible for the area's toll roads, and his selection not without a little bit of controversy. Board member Teresa Jacobs, the mayor of Orange County, of course, and chairman Walter Ketchum voting against Precourt, and they cited political favoritism, also saying they didn't think he was qualified for the job. What do you think this says about the credibility of the agency, Lou Fry?
Not much.
I agree.
Yeah. That agency's had a pure problem, and I think the people that are there are legitimate and trying to do a job. And, you know, the politics is over once you get through the vote, and mm-hmm. let's hope that a lot of work needs to be done out of there.
I agree with Mary Jacobs. I also agree with Scott Maxwell writing at the Sentinel. It was obviously a very political decision. Steve Precourt, who by training is an engineer, but he's never run an expressway authority. He had other candidates who had. He didn't even meet the qualification they advertised. And for him to take the job, it was obviously extremely political. And I know there's legislation filed, I think, by Senator David Simmons to expand the expressway mm-hmm. authority now to include three counties, surrounding counties. And I think an effort there would be maybe to have some local, more local officials appointed to the authority than the governor appointing the vast majority, because that's the problem. I mean, why not have local officials in charge of that mission?
Expressway Authority, I was the general counsel for it, my first job in, I guess, 66, and after Kirk's election and that. And that's always been one, I think, that you sit on, and you every day that it goes by and nothing happens, you're very pleased.
Lou Fry, do you think people pay enough attention to agencies like the Expressway Authority? I mean, they command a lot of money, and obviously, you know, a lot of, I think it's 90-some miles of toll roads through the Central Florida area. It's a pretty important agency, but do people really pay enough attention to it?
Well, you've answered your own question. Obviously not. Yeah. And the reason why, well, people don't understand it. A lot of times it's better if you're running an agency to keep what you're doing. Now, I don't mean anything illegal, but to keep what you're doing out of the front page. Mm-hmm. And you would think that people might be interested in it, but you'd also think they might want the right to vote.
And I guess, of course, Governor Rick Scott now calling for a special election to fill that vacant 44th State House seat. Do you see that seat staying with the Republicans, Lou Fry?
Don't know. Yeah.
I think it will. I live in that area, and keep in mind, Eric Azanego, who was in the legislature for two terms, but after reapportionment, he got cut into the same district as Steve Precorn, decided not to run, but would run when Steve left. And he's already raising money. He's a very impressive young lawyer, nice guy, served two terms already, so I would say he's a front runner. There are two Democrats, but the Democrats are, I think they raised like $1,500 a piece, so that doesn't bode well for a Democrat.
And plus, it's a half an ad for 10 minutes.
Half an ad for on cable for 10 minutes. Yeah. But anyway, it's a Republican district anyway. Mm-hmm.
Just finally, former Orlando Police Chief Val Demings announcing last week her bid to take on Teresa Jacobs in the race for Orange County Mayor. Dick Batchelor, you mentioned a name for a number of possible races. Were you surprised that she decided to challenge Jacobs?
A bit. I want to say yes, I know, but that sounds awfully political, doesn't it? But I, and this late in the game, a number of us, myself included, have signed on with Teresa Jacobs, as have the major major Democratic fundraisers. I mean, if you look at the major Democratic fundraisers in town, there are only five, really, who raise substantial amounts of money. They're all committed to Teresa. And getting in this late in the game, I think, put some people in a bind because, I mean, personally, I am very, very, very fond of Val Demings. I think she would be a great office holder, but also fond of and supporting Teresa Jacobs. And once you give your handshake and commitment, that's where it is.
Dick and I did the same thing. There's nobody else in the race, and certainly a well-qualified person. Mm-hmm. You would hope in something like this that maybe her advisors pushed her one way. I thought that she could have picked her congressional district. Mm-hmm. And ended up in the Congress, which to me made a lot more sense. And so I was a little, frankly, disappointed when.
Right. Well, she took on Dan Webster, of course, and wasn't successful there. I mean, if she doesn't succeed against Mayor Jacobs, it's kind of 0-2. What does that do for her political career, do you think?
Well, it certainly isn't going to help her in fundraising.
It doesn't. It doesn't help you in fundraising. But I think, you know, one of the speculation was, you know, Tiffany Moore Russell, a county commissioner, had term limit out and running for clerk of the court. Speculation was if Val moved into that district and ran for county commission, she would win by a runaway. And then as a county commissioner, you sit there and wait for the term limits to
build your base and
then you build your base and go. But we are where we are. I mean, she's a wonderful lady, but I think she got in the race too late.
I've been speaking to Dick Batchelor. He's a former Democratic State House representative and head of the Dick Batchelor Management Group. Dick, thanks for coming in.
Thank you.
Also joined by 90.7 political commentator Lou Fry, former Republican congressman and attorney at Lowndes, Drostick, Doster, Cantor and Reed. Thanks for joining us, Lou.
Always a pleasure.
The conversation about what's happening in Florida continues online at wmfe.org/intersection. There you can also sign up for our weekly podcast. Support for Intersection comes from our listeners. Brendan Byrne is assistant producer. I'm Matthew Petty. Thanks for listening.